Welcome back to everybody to the second half of the biennium, where I'm sure this is my favorite part of the session. We have Representative Garofalo to keep us happy and all these other smiling faces, and it's the part of session where we have a little semblance of knowing what's going on and what's happening. And so it's my favorite part when we're all back here in committee. And as you know, we have some new faces that are here. Let's see, where are the pages? There's one of them over there. That is Andrew Kesh, who's dropping things right there. Don't mean to embarrass him. He's from the University of Minnesota and living in Faribault. And we always invite our new pages, but I'm looking for Sarah. Where is she? Okay, well, when she gets back, we always invite the pages up to the front and you can say a little bit about yourself. So you can be thinking about it. She's going to be surprised. And then we have Tom Hamill from the House Public Information. Where is Tom? There you are. Okay. And you're new to our committee, so welcome very much. We'll look forward to reading your articles. And before we start, and hopefully Sarah will get back before we hear the first bill, we have three sets of minutes that are left over from our last meeting and from the couple of hearings that we had during the interim. So first of all, I just need a motion to approve the first set of minutes back from March 27th. Representative Dominguez moves the minutes from March 27th. Are there any discussion? Okay, hearing none, all those in favor of the minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. The minutes, the motion prevails and the minutes are approved. We have two more. Who wants to move November 14th from Red Wing?
So move.
Representative Dominguez, we can always count on for these minutes.
You weren't even.
Any discussion of the minutes from November 14th? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. And the same thing for January 14th. Representative Dominguez moves those minutes. Okay, tomorrow. I'm sorry, that's right. It's your hearing. I'm sorry. We were in St. Peter. Representative tomorrow. Thank you. I'm glad that I have Shannon here to catch me before I'm rashly having Representative Dominguez do your hearing. Representative Morrow moves approval of the minutes from January 14th when we were at St. Peter High School, and it was a wonderful hearing. Representative Morrow did a wonderful job. Any discussion on his motion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed. The motion prevails, and those minutes are approved. And now we're going to hear the first bonding bill, but before we do, I just want to say a word or two about the process. We're going to hear all the bonding bills, hopefully, today and Thursday, but there's, you know, some of them are still coming in, so we'll have to be flexible if we get any more introduced. But we hope to hear them all in the next 2 days, next two hearings, and then send them on to the bonding committee. We have to actually do a bill due to our procedures, and we have to either send them on just as a list, or we can prioritize them. And so I've kind of been thinking that it would be a good idea if on Thursday, after we've heard the last one, if our whole committee has a say in how we would prioritize them. So we're actually thinking of doing a process that I heard tell that Representative Gunther did at one time, where we have, everybody has little dots if our staff can locate some, where we would have all the choices and people can vote on the various bonding bills. So I hope that that everybody will have a chance to listen carefully. Some, of course, are bills we had in the bill last year, and then others are new. So the ones especially that we already heard last year, we won't take a lot of time on, but we want to hear and get a chance to refresh our memories and then hear any that are new. Does anybody have any questions on that before we hear Representative Murphy still? Representative Mariani.
So, Madam Chair, we won't be voting on these bills today, is that correct?
Exactly. We will just lay them over for And in this case, it won't be for possible inclusion. They all will be included in our omnibus bill that we send on to Representative Hausman. But it's a question of what will be the priority with them.
Thank you.
Representative Garofalo.
Well, Madam Chair, it's more of an announcement rather than a question about the process. I just wanted to make sure I got to check your attention over here.
You right, that might
now an appropriate time for it, or is now an appropriate time for...
You can do it now.
Okay. I just wanted to say that, you know, I know this is the first day of the session, and usually people refer to this as kind of the first day back to school, and everyone's wearing their best clothes. And as our symbolic teacher in the classroom here, I know that you're not allowed to say who your favorite student is, but I think we all know who it is. But as a student, I don't have any prohibitions. So on this, on the first day of class, to my favorite teacher, I wanted to say thank you, wish you a good year. And I even brought an apple in for my favorite.
Oh, my gosh. Is it Pollard? Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Representative Garofalo, you are my favorite today. What is it?
Can I get a hearing? Can I get a hearing on some of my bills?
Representative Garofalo, just come to me and we'll see what we can do. Anything for you.
Well, Madam Chair?
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, I'm going to ask to make up with Representative Benson because I know when Representative Garofalo was talking about favorite, I saw Benson's eyebrows pop up.
Representative Benson, did you bring anything?
Oh, what a stunt.
Madam Chair, I do have it in my office. It was too large to bring down here.
I will wait. Okay, thank you. It's very nice to start out with some fun. And I think that bonding bills are fun because we don't have to make the decisions. We can pass them on to the bonding committee, and we know that they have a really hard job. But it's my opinion that it's a rare bill that would come in front of this committee that shouldn't be a priority in the bonding committee. I just think the education bills and the things that we do for students and their learning, I just never think we have enough bills in the bonding committee. So I'm glad that we have these 2 days of very pleasurable bills that we don't have to make hard choices about. Representative Murphy, are you ready? Representative Murphy, of course, is a very special member of our committee. And her bill, both because she's Representative Murphy and because she has such an apple pie and motherhood topic, is going to be our vehicle bill. Welcome, Representative Murphy. Would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move adoption of the House File 2558, be recommended to pass.
Representative Murphy has moved House File 2558 to be recommended to pass.
Patrick told you is exactly what my words were.
That's what I meant too. Okay, Representative Murphy.
Thank you very much. Members, this afternoon when we went into session, we had a moment of silence for former Representative Robert McCarran. And Robert McCarran was kind of a mischievous person and a person that was sometimes belligerent and sometimes curmudgeon-y. But when he talked about education bills and education as a whole, he was always pretty serious. And part of his legacy here is his recognition of the need for funding for libraries and bonding for libraries. And you did a wonderful job last year in funding libraries, new money for the first time in many of our memories, probably since Bob McCarran left. And this is the second shoe. The bond part is the second shoe. And we've had a bond bill for libraries that's been funded some years to the tune of a few hundred thousand dollars or a million or two. But we haven't had a real bonding bill for libraries where they could give real grants out. We've done well with the parts of the bonding bill that allowed them to bring the local libraries up to code, and some rehabilitation, little tiny rehabilitation kind of things. But as part of lifelong learning, libraries are being used every single day, and they're not available to the public in the form that the public needs them anymore, some of them. And so I willingly carried this bill on behalf of the Library Association and Minnesota Libraries and lifelong learners throughout the state of Minnesota. And Elaine Keith is here to introduce some other people and to give you details.
Welcome, Ms. Keith. Please state your name for the record.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Elaine Keith, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Library Association. This is a competitive grant program, matching grants, that was originally established back in 1994, as Representative Murphy said, to help public libraries become handicapped accessible. And in 2005, the program was broadened to allow grants for construction of new libraries and also for renovation of existing libraries. And you have two handouts in your packet that list all of the grants that have been made since the inception of this program. The accessibility grants are on this yellow sheet that looks like this. And that's a much thicker list because, of course, that has been going since 1994. And then the construction grants, which are more recent, we just had two rounds of those grants, are on the green sheet. So if you look through that, I'd be surprised if any of you were not able to find a library in your district that has received a grant. Libraries from all over the state have benefited from these grants over the years. You can also see there's a box on the front of each of these sheets that lists how much money has been provided from the local level as opposed to the state. And even though the minimum is a one-to-one match of local dollars to state dollars, the reality is that for the accessibility grant, $6.62 of local money has been provided for every dollar of state funding. And for the construction grant, it's $5.69 of local funding to every dollar of state funding. So there's been a very, very substantial local effort that's been made. We're very grateful for the money that has been provided in each major bonding bill since 1994, but we've been disappointed that the funding has not increased. The 2006 bonding bill included $1 million for these grants, just the same amount of money that was included in the 1994 bonding bill. And as you might imagine, construction costs have gone up somewhat since 1994. $1 million for a statewide grant program that now includes new construction doesn't go very far. And so that's why we're requesting $10 million in this bonding cycle. There are a significant number of public library buildings in this state that are badly in need of major renovation or outright replacement. And let me give you a few statistics. 54% of our public library buildings were built before 1969, and 32% were built before 1939. Many of these older buildings don't have space for public access computers. They don't have space for children's programs, young adult study and research, or to accommodate new technology. The need to upgrade our libraries is statewide, and we've done a survey that indicates that we can anticipate about $120 million worth of bonding projects that will be requesting money in the next bonding cycle for whatever money is included in this year's bonding bill. And if we look out a little bit further, the total estimated cost of library projects planned in the next few years tops $260 million. So there are a lot of dreams out there, and we hope that you will help us to make some of them come true. I also want to say that in the past, there have been a few individual communities that have received money directly in the bonding bill for their libraries, and we really think that the better way, rather than having individual public libraries come to the legislature and ask for money directly, is to go through this competitive grant process. We think that that's more fair and more efficient. And we succeeded in convincing libraries that this is the way to go. It used to be that you might have as many as a dozen individual library requests coming to this committee. And I think it was very hard for members to sort through which ones were the better projects and so forth. But for this approach to continue to work, the amount of funding available through this grant program needs to be meaningful so that a library with a solid proposal has a reasonable chance of getting a grant and getting a significant amount of money. One more thing I want to say, and that is that public libraries aren't just a local resource. Public libraries typically serve residents from well beyond the borders of the cities and counties that fund them. And your library card is good at any public library in this state. It really is your gateway to the wider world of information. And that's why we think it makes sense for the state to partner with our local libraries to make sure that we have modern, up-to-date library facilities that can meet the information needs of Minnesotans. And I have with me today representatives of three communities who would like to briefly testify in support of this proposal. Two of them are communities that hope to apply for a grant to upgrade their libraries to do fund this program. And a third is, and we're going to start with her actually, is someone who's here to tell you about how much it meant to her community to receive a grant. We thought it'd be nice if you heard a success story. So I'd like to turn the microphone over to Sharon Stratt from Malacca.
We like success stories on this committee. Welcome, Ms. Stack, and if you could state your name for the tape, and then we'll hear what you have to say.
My name is Sharon Stratt, and I'm the branch manager of the Malacca Library. And it is a thrill to be a success story. 3 years ago, we were down here. I didn't have to speak at that time. Shelley Larson, who was president of the Friends Group, spoke pleading for assistance from the library to apply for matching funding for an improvement grant. We were in an extremely small library that no amount of renovation would have done any good. We at that time had the smallest library measured per square footage per capita in the whole state of Minnesota. The accessibility was extremely poor. Expansion was not feasible. We just really needed a brand new library. The local community had already raised over $1.1 million through a city referendum, the participation of surrounding townships, children collecting pennies, church bake sales, church cheese, socials, memorials, an alumni campaign, and contributions of hundreds of local donors. This fundraising was spearheaded by a small but very dedicated group of volunteers who worked so very hard to educate the public about what this new facility could do for their community through their contributions. This was a prime example of how a grassroots effort can make such a difference in so many people's lives. However, even with this tremendous effort expended and the excellent response that we received, this project still would have been dead in the water without the monies we received through this competitive grant through the state. Building costs were rising exponentially. Our sources for funding were nearly tapped. The grant money that we received from the state in 2005 gave us what we needed to begin construction. Without you, we would not have it. We moved into our new facility on March 24, 2007. Again, the citizens came forward. We had over 150 volunteers offer to come and move into our new library together. It was a phenomenal process. That day was their most desired first chance to see the inside of their new building. And it was so much fun to watch. They were so thrilled with what we had. They were willing to give up at least a day of their time and energy to help us move in. This response continues to be overwhelming. Usage of our library has exploded. We're now able to have story times and programs in our library we just did not have the space before. Meetings are held there. Classes are led. People with limited mobility are now able to use their own community library. families with young children now feel safe enough to come in and let their children wander through the library. It's a very homey and welcoming place for them to be. Many people come in to use our computers or their own laptops on our wireless network. Others come to sit by the fireplace and read the newspaper or the magazine. Some just come to sit by the fireplace and chat with their neighbors. We even have some very spirited discussions. If you need problems solved, the people who sit there can solve them for you. Teens come in to hang out with their friends. Kids come in after school to do their homework or to just play on the computers, spend time with their friends, or just wait for rides to pick them up. Some days, this library feels like Grand Central Station, and it's glorious. It's a wonderful problem that I have now, not being able to keep up with everybody who's using it. Words cannot express how much of a difference this has made in Malacca and the surrounding area. I am so grateful for it. The community of Malacca is so grateful for it. And we would like to be able to give other communities this same opportunity.
Thank you very much, Ms. Strack, and your words did express it very well. We probably all want to go there. By the fire. Okay, thank you. And then you have Mr. Matthews. Welcome, and please state your name.
Thanks, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Nathan Matthews. I'm the city administrator for the city of Staples. And I appreciate the opportunity to introduce you to our project here. I submitted a packet. I'm not sure if you have it. It's got a little historic logo symbol on there. Basically, I have 3 points to my presentation today. Briefly, I will introduce you to and describe our project. I will also summarize the local fundraising efforts we will be undertaking 2008 and 2009. And I would like to explain how we in the city of Staples feel that the state assistance is both merited and appropriate for our project. To begin with, to describe the project, we have a 14,000 square foot multi-use facility we are hoping to be building here in 2008 and into early 2009. We are tying in a library to a city hall and police station for the primary reason that we are looking at building as much sustainable design and green design into this building, and we'd like to educate our children and community on the merits of that, and we feel that it's, if the local government can't do it, who can? The library portion of the project is about 5,600 square feet for about $785,000 worth of building materials alone, so adding in construction and contingencies, we're pushing $900,000. That's our goal and that's our dream. The project site we've identified as a city is the corner of U.S. Highway 10, one of the major recreational highways of the state of Minnesota, and State Highway 210 as well. We're up in Lake Country. There's two main reasons why we need to construct a new library facility. We are one of the minor percentages there. The building we're in right now was constructed in 1936 and was an old hospital. And if you come to ever visit our library, you'll see that our library looks like it's in the basement of an old hospital. We have very poor accessibility for our elderly residents and our handicapped patrons. I took some pictures yesterday just to kind of give you an understanding of what our current facility looks like. Those first two pages are the old ambulance ramp down to the basement, and that's our handicap accessible part of the building. We barely pass, but it's not as usable to those folks as we would like. And in addition, with an old building that was built in 1936, we have some code deficiencies we need to address. We want to make it a safer and healthier place for our patrons and our community. Two main factors have delayed our project over the past few years. And number one has been the statutory debt limit of the city. As a poor community in Todd and Rodina County, we don't have the booming tax base. It's a common story of outstate cities. But that's been a primary burden for us. And secondly, our tax rate subsequently is higher too. And it's harder to fund these programs in this project because of that. Current facility, like I mentioned, was built in 1936. We moved in there as a library and a city together in 1976. We don't have an air exchange system in the building. The heating system is very poorly regulated. No heating or cooling system centralized exists. I mentioned we have floor access for our elderly and handicapped patrons. No hot water in the building, no drinking water. We have asbestos pipes that are leaking. And also we have limited space for our programs. When we have our State River Regional reps come and do our programs, they scatter all over the building into offices in the upper floors. The second page of pictures will give you kind of an idea of what that basement looks like. We have a patron there using a computer jammed close to our checkout desk, and it's pretty crammed in there. And there's a picture of some of the pipe leaks that we have, and also our emergency door, which is pretty rusted. A summarizing of the local fundraising, we're gearing up for that this spring and summer. 501c3 group has been organized, and they've basically organized primarily around raising money for a new library. We wanted to let you know that they have biannual book sale revenue dedicated to the project, food sales at events, and we have raffles and auctions and all the ways we can kind of drum up local support coming. Three reasons why we in Staples feel that state assistance is merited and appropriate. First of all, we are a good distance from any major city. We're 30 miles from Brainerd, 15 miles from Wadena. We serve a large rural population, being in a part of the state near four counties. Our new library will be located on the state's primary recreational highway, which is Highway 10. And as we heard, that library card is good anywhere. And so we hope on the way to the lake people will stop by. Central Lakes College as well is located in the city of Staples. The state has an educational asset there. And we have a growing student population, so we feel as well that it's appropriate and merited to help support our library. And finally, just to let you know, we are a poor community, but Staples is rising, and we hope to partner with the state on our good stories coming here. We have some good EDA developments, a brand new hospital in the community, and so additionally, I talked to the superintendent of our school district yesterday, and for the first time in recent memory, we have a waiting list for ECSE program. And those of you that know that, that's a real healthy indication of your school in the future. And we've got some positive energy going on with that news as well, and want to match that with a good library for our community. So thank you for your time.
Thank you very, very much, Mr. Matthews. Mr. Bowden.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairman.
Welcome. If you could please say your name for the paper.
I'm John Bowden from Marshall, Minnesota. I appreciate the opportunity to come and talk to you about our library at Marshall. We feel we are making a very significant step in history. Our facility, if you will, built in 1968, was for a town of 5,000 people. Today, Marshall is a town of 13,000. Very proud, home of Schwann Food Company, if you ever have the yellow truck show up at the door. We have a small library, essentially, that serves more people than it's almost like a Walmart. 100,000 people went through the front door last year. 7,000 children, and I think one of the most significant things is you study. We have 400 homeschooled children use this as a home base for 30 miles. I'm the retired library director at Southwest Minnesota State, and one of my big passions, obviously, is avoiding duplication. If you look around the state, everybody wonders why we have school libraries, state university, and public libraries. And let me assure you one aspect in Marshall I'm quite proud of. Our library, for example, our children's collection is not duplicated out at the university. We have roughly about 500 education students who use the public library, unheard of, from around the state. I think a remarkable thing about our library, where we are, I'm now the chair of our library foundation. Today we've raised $4.1 million of our projected building cost of 6.5. We have a benefactor in our community, Mr. Robert Carr, who made a $2 million pledge for this facility. The county and the city and our community has responded very well. I know as a legislature you like to see public support, and a lot of this has come from the private sector. What are some other things that I think will make our library unique? Marshall is a town that is a regional community that serves about a 75-mile radius. We have 8,000 people who drive into work every day. Our library serves a rural county in a very rich agricultural area. We are very big in trying to help our county. And if you know rural areas today in child care, very unique thing, for example, our children's librarian goes out and serves 33 daycare centers doing story hours, which I think is unique, unheard of around the state. We are very big into what we call workforce transition. We do a tremendous amount of education in our library. We have a teen center that has used this place greatly. We have gone across the state looking at grants. We've written over 20 grants, and if you've been following the thing in what we call capital outlay, foundations are not giving money towards capital. They want to give it more toward program development. This presents a very tough thing. We have capped our local units as far as we feel, our private sector, and we think this state grant can make a big, significant difference for us. We're looking for a facility of 29,500 square feet. Our present facility is about 15,000 square feet. We feel if you could help us, it would make the difference to make our facility a reality. I have spent 41 years in education, and I can tell you a library is worth its weight in gold. It's the heart of a community. One of the things of my goal when I was a university library director, I used to be the senior library dean within the Minsky system. I created a county library project with the judicial system, and I don't know if many of you are aware of what county law libraries are in outstate Minnesota. They don't get much use. But one of the things we're very proud of down in the 5th Judicial District is we put sharing of tax money out of, and all those, if you will, court fees out of courthouses into the public library sector. Today, if you walk, for example, into our Marshall Public Library, you have access to Westlaw at no cost. Those of you who are lawyers will know what that's all about. But it's there for the general public, for the university. We have a public library that is utilized greatly. It's for the whole sector, and we feel if you can help us, we will be very appreciative. We stand in front of you. I think our community, having raised $4.1 million, is a very significant step. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Bowden. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you just clarify the number of homeschool students that use that library?
Mr. Bowden.
Now, we have 400 homeschool children that use this library. In outstate Minnesota, that is a very significant figure. Homeschool children need resources, obviously.
Thank you for pointing that back out again, Representative Murphy. Do you have any concluding comments? You or Ms. Keith?
Well, I have one more question, Ms. Keith.
Huh?
Could you kind of explain what a grant would be? The success story was wonderful, and then the need stories were wonderful, but $10 million doesn't go so far either, and bake sales can only raise so much, and the auctions and all that kind of thing. I mean, how much could they possibly anticipate for a grant if we had a pot of $10 million?
Ms. Keith.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, the maximum grant as the program is constructed now, we're not asking for any change there, for accessibility only, well, in both cases it's 50% of the cost of the project is the maximum grant, but there's a cap of $1 million for new construction or renovation, which both of these projects that were described would be. A cap of $200,000 if it's purely an accessibility project. So the maximum grant would be $1 million. In the past, we've only one time received more than $1 million. That was 1.5 in 98. Otherwise, in each funding cycle, it's been $1 million. And so, the state library has been clearly very reluctant to give all the money to one project, and so the grants have been much, much smaller than that. Ironically, the handful of libraries that I referenced earlier that came to the legislature directly got much more. There were two libraries that got over $1 million apiece. Grand Rapids got $1.2 million, St. James got $1,011,000, and then there were two other libraries that each got $500,000. So, you know, that's a concern, too, that those who have come directly to the legislature have gotten larger grants. Those who have gone through this program because the funding has been so low have gotten much smaller grants.
Representative Murphy.
But, Madam Chair, and when I was listening to the testifier, I did hear, though, that the amount that they did get was the key for their beginning. And I think that's really important. And I think this, whatever amount is in there, whatever it is, with the improvements on what we have, and we can only go forth, and it might take 100 years, but maybe somewhere along the line there. Lottery win or something, but this is a start, and I appreciate your attentiveness, and I would appreciate your support for the bill.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. And we have two questioners, and then we'll go on to the next bill. Representative Detmer, followed by Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I have a success story. If you look on the green sheet there, Forest Lake just opened a brand new library. We went in partnership with Washington County. It's a Washington County library, city, and also we have a service center there with Washington County. We are very excited about what we just did in Forest Lake. I have a question, Madam Chairman. What are some of the other ways that communities and counties, how are these libraries financed besides these grants?
Madam Chair, Representative Detmer, it's, you know, primarily cities and counties coming up with the money. They either levy for it or they issue bonds. There have been a few where they've gone to a local sales tax. In addition to the bake sales and so forth. But this is the only state funding for this purpose. Years and years ago, we had a federal grant program, but the amount of money was never very significant, and that went away. It must have been 10 or 12 years ago, something like that.
Thank you.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm proud to say Malacca is part of my district, and they worked so hard to raise, as the testifier said, over $1 million, and it was the grant from the Department of Education that, as Representative Murphy alluded to, really put us over the top so we could begin the project. But I found, and Malacca would attest to this, that we lobbied long and hard to the Commissioner of Education to ensure that she and her committee saw our project as a very important project. We had our facts and our design. We had many, many presentations before her. I worked closely with the city administrator of Malacca. And I need to tell legislators, you know, who may have projects in the pipeline, that you need to work closely with city administrators, library folk, and with the Commissioner of Education. If you're going to receive a part of what I hope will be a generous grant. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erickson, for that advice for any members who may have projects. And as Ms. Keith said, this seems to be the fairest process where people can work together and then go through this process rather than having what I call end-run type bills down here to the legislature that tend to go to the powerful or the favored. And this is just, you know, I think how we want to do our libraries. And it always amazes me, you know, we've been giving $1 million to libraries, now they're asking for 10, but yet they have a need of $260 million. How many other players in our state would be so modest in their request? So thank you so much, and we will lay this bill over. And before I mentioned that we're going to Red Lake, but actually we have a short bill that I have. But first, both of our pages are here now, and I got a chance to warn Andrew. I don't know if he shared that with Sarah or not, but if we could have the two of you come and just tell us a little bit about yourselves, because we're going to be with you for the next couple of months, and we'd like to know more about you. So if you could sit down and talk sure. into the microphone, and Andrew, since you got the warning first, you can go first.
All right. As has been said, Andrew Kess. You can call me Andy if you like. Andrew's fine. Went to high school in Fairville, U of M graduate, political science degree. Just recently moved back to Minnesota to work here at the Capitol from San Diego. Living a nice sunny life out there. Something interesting about me is I'm a huge, huge hockey fan. I love the Minnesota Wild extremely. Played my whole life, still do. So if you like hockey, golf, baseball, that's something that I'm really into.
Madam Chair, can I question the phages or not?
Well, Representative Graff, I think we're going to protect them from you on the first day. Unless you have an apple for them. Okay, Sarah Krugman.
Hi, my name is Sarah Krugman. Born and raised in St. Cloud. Graduated from St. Cloud State in December with a double major in political science and English. I actually just moved to Roseville on Saturday, so I am currently wandering aimlessly around the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. So that's what takes up most of my time when I'm not here, trying to find my way around.
And she was smart enough to move into my district.
Yeah.
So welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Nemeth, if you could come forward, I would move my bill, which is House File 27444, for inclusion in the Omnibus K-12 Library Bill. And I think if it's all right with you, I'll just stay right here, since I think this one will be short. This is not a monetary request. It is a language request due to a circumstance that we had in the Ramsey County Libraries, and I'm going to let Ms. Nemeth explain it.
Thank you. I'm sorry I have a cold. My name is Susan Nemeth. I'm the director of the Ramsey County Library. And I want to say first and foremost that I really support the Library Accessibility and Construction Grant Program. State funding is essential for libraries. It maintains geographic access. It provides seamless service across jurisdictions. It provides archival collections that we all borrow from. It allows us to innovate. It allows us to reduce waste and become more efficient. And the construction grants program really does meet all of those goals. I do have one problem with the construction grant program, and it's not a problem with the program itself. It's that the construction grant program is subject to Minnesota Statute 16A.695(3). And this statute gives any project that has state bonding proceeds sort of permanent equity ownership of that property. And I'm going to give you a specific instance where this played out. In 2003, Ramsey County decided to redevelop its North St. Paul Library. And the decision was to sell an old building that had accessibility issues for about $750,000, take that money and put it into a multi-use facility in the community. It was a great project. We've achieved the same level of CERC that we had at the old library for one-third the operating cost. In the process of selling that building, we discovered that the library had received an $11,000 accessibility grant in the past. And the state sent us a letter saying they own 1.67% of the building, and that they deserve 1.67% of the proceeds of that building. And it was a small amount of money. It was about $22,000, but when you're on a $750,000 budget, that came as a pretty big shock to our system. It's a small example, but I think the consequences, if you play it out into a larger grant, could be pretty significant. I disagree with this particular provision in statute because I think it lacks transparency. I think a lot of legislators believe that they're giving a grant and that in effect it's almost a loan or a sale of the portion of that local unit of government facility to the state. I've been told by the Department of Financing that it's a great rationing mechanism, that a lot of jurisdictions choose not to apply for state bonding grants because of this particularly this particular statutory item. But I don't think it's necessarily the best rationing mechanism. I would rather go through the competitive process that the Department of Education offers in the Library Construction Grant Program. And the third thing is, I think it actually discourages innovation and change. I think the North St. Paul Library is a perfect example of where a local unit of government was trying to be more efficient and serve their tax base better. And I think it discourages the kinds of facility changes that many local units of government need to undergo over the next 10 or 20 years, especially as we become a technology-based society. So with that, I am suggesting that we change the statute, and there's a copy of the changes in front of you. This change, I think, is more of a compromise position than I think some of the things that have been presented in the past. What it does is it says that the local unit of government really has a liability through the life of the grant, but not after that. It doesn't contain that sort of perpetual ownership.
And Ms. Nemeth, this is only if the bonds have been fully repaid.
Correct.
So any questions on this this proposal? Representative Rapallo.
Madam Chair and the testifier, does this apply to only certain types of bonds that are issued, or is this for any and all state bonds that I see itemized in Subdivision 3? In other words, are we talking about bonds related to a specific local unit of government or geographic area? This is all bonds across the state for all purposes?
My intention is that it only apply to local units of government, but I'm not an attorney, so I would seek clarification.
Ms. Nemeth, that's the way I read it as well. It says political subdivision.
Okay. And Madam,
Representative Grappolo.
And Madam Chair, to the testifiers, has the Department of Finance weighed in with an opinion on this, or any thoughts on the matter?
Ms. Nemeth, you mentioned that you checked in with them, and what did they say about this bill?
I did have a discussion with Peter Sousen from the Department of Finance. I don't think he's comfortable with this language.
I would.
Representative Grappolo.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I would imagine not.
Mm-hmm.
So, thank you.
So, either one of our staff wants to comment on the bill.
Madam Chair, I think there are probably two issues for members to think about here. One of those is the issue that the bond is still current. That is, if there are still payments by the state to be made on that bond, there are issues that are raised with the bond holders if those facilities are sold and the money doesn't return to the state. Once the bond period is ended, there's not an issue about what the bond attorneys think, but there is an issue about public policy about how best those distributions should be handled. But I think it's important for members to understand that while the bonds are running is a separate issue than once the bonds have for those projects have expired.
Madam Chair,
Representative Grappolo.
The life cycle of bonds, are we on a 15-year repayment schedule? I don't know that off the top of my head. I'm asking.
Representative Grappolo, I don't either. Either one of you know. Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair, I think the general rule is 20 years, but I'm not sure how the refinancing of that plays in. I don't know if finance would like to comment on that 20-year period or not, but I think the general rule on state GO bonds is 20 years.
And Representative Grappolo or anyone else, this obviously will be part of our discussion when we pass the actual bill, so you can have a chance to check with Mr. Sasson and do further research, and we can discuss it at that time as well.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering, did you check to see if this would be precedent-setting, or could Mr. Strom comment on that? We do have to think into the future, and it seems to me this would be precedent-setting.
Representative Erickson, we can ask Mr. Strom, but I believe it is, like most bills that we do, precedent-setting. Mr. Strom.
And Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, this would apply to all political subdivisions, not just situations related to libraries.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much. This bill will be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And now we have Representative Saylor and Mr. Hammett for House File 1120. That I will move for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. And welcome to the committee. members will remember that this is a bill we did hear last year at greater length, and so we hope to have a very condensed hearing on this because it's, I understand, the very same bill we had before. So I don't think we need to hear a lot, but we need to refresh our memory. So welcome to the committee, Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Indeed, this bill probably is one that many people are familiar with, and so therefore we will be brief about it. I do have an amendment to offer for with this bill, and I'm just wondering if you would like me to offer that at this time, Madam Chair? Would you like me to offer the amendment at this time?
Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Saylor. I'm busy talking. I'll move for Representative Saylor, Amendment A1. Any discussion or questions on that? This is just to take care of inflationary increases since last year.
Correct, Madam Chair. And one little deletion is just in some wording that changes simply because we're in a different part of the cycle. So just to get it in the shape that we need for this bill. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions or discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment is adopted. And now we're on to the bill. Representative Saylor.
Again, Madam Chair and members, thank you. I would just like to mention that, this is a bill that we've had before to help with the completion of the high school and middle school project at Red Lake, which has been underway for some time, and they have been coming back to us and coming back and coming back, needing the completion of this project for the high school and middle school. I would just like to say I was up at the Red Lake School 2 weeks ago. A nice whiteout day to be there. It was about 30 below, and I'm driving almost, couldn't even see to get there. But at any rate, when I did, I certainly got a warm welcome. And I just would like to share with the committee some of the comments from the superintendent. And he said that, this has been a difficult time, and yet now the students, the atmosphere in the school is just changing. And he credits much of that to some of the changes that have occurred in building and different safety measures and things. But he said that the behavior in the students is just incredible. It's just, he said it was marked. And I wanted to be sure that I passed that along to the committee because I think that's something that everyone would be, it's worth sharing.
And Representative Saylor, there's a new superintendent than the one most of us would remember now?
That's correct, yes. Superintendent Brent Gish.
Mm-hmm.
I'd also just like to mention that the student numbers are up by about 100 students throughout the district, and that's another positive sign, of course, a sign that they really need to finish their building. It is time to pass this bill, and I will now hand it over to Monty Hammett in case there are any other questions. Perhaps there will not be, since, as I say, this is the same bill. The proposal is the same as it was last year.
Mr. Hammett, welcome to the committee, and please restate your name for the record. And you've also got with you Dolores.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Monty Hammett. I work with the Red Lake School District.
She's always called Hannah. Recently retired from the Red Lake School District, but still working.
That seems to happen these days. Welcome.
Madam Chair and committee members and staff, thank you very, very kindly for taking the opportunity, time, or giving us the opportunity and the time to come back before your committee to present to you folks our dire need to try to finish our middle school, high school. Madam Chair and committee members, thank you so much for your past support since 2001 and all of the workings. And, we've been phasing our project, but, we're probably good phasers now and one of the best in school construction in the state. But it has some very positive things because on these last two phases now, we have come in on time, we've come in under budget, we've been able to take some of the construction elements and move to the next phase a little bit so there would be no duplication, no overlapping, and thank you for the committee to carry forward some of our unexpended funds last year into the last one. And we're so pleased to also report to the committee on January 3rd, our new students from the middle school moved into their new facility, and the swap was made for the high school over to their facility. And now we need to finish that facility now totally. One of the major issues of facing us in this, which we wanted, is one is getting one room and space for our children. With that, the infrastructure we stretched as far as we could stretch in terms of the mechanical, the electrical, and the major component parts of the, and this is where we need, and a great focus is in tying community-based to the school as what was in the master plan of facilities that we developed back in 2002, 2003, and modulated and updated as the time goes by to bring this as one, a beautiful community a place where everybody can come and enjoy and learn. So it goes beyond our K-12, goes beyond our early childhood. It goes from these little babies, and I was just sharing with Rita at 140-some births last year, it goes from those little babies all the way to the grandparents, the elders, and the rest coming in now and starting. It's been so nice now that we got the old part of the building, finally demolition down, and we had delays, and we thank you folks again for being with us during our hardship and our tragedy of 321. And this put delay on our construction. It put delays on things. But thank you folks for bearing with us, helping us get through this. And we got one more year of mourning, and things are back. And the students now are getting more resilient. The brightness, they love the classrooms, and everything is coming along and so bright for them. The construction and the work and the things that you have before us are basically the same as what they were in the adaptations and changes by the State Department of Education, State Department of Finance, upgrading the process for us as they see, and which you folks got the copies of the review and comments in the state's request on that. So, Madam Chair, I just appreciate and really ask you folks for your continued help and support, and thank those of you who have been able to come and visit, and please come back soon. Come back and see the children's faces in their eyes when they see new science rooms where they've never seen a science room. Come back and see how bright they are. And this moved me, Madam Chair of the Committee, and this moved me from listening to Mary Murphy and the library people. This is education's fantastic. And we need to finish our school so that we can move forward and our kids can continue to prosper with it. So with that, Madam Chair, we would be glad to try to answer any of the committee chairs' questions or other elements.
Thank you very much, and we like to hear a second success story today. It's very good to hear, and we're very anxious to have this project completed, and so we want to make sure we give the exact amount of money so it can be completed. And as I don't know if you mentioned it, I don't think you did, but this was a project that I and the staff have discussed quite a bit with Commissioner Segrin, and she strongly supports it. It was recommended by the Department of Education, so we're just kind of flummoxed that it didn't end up in the governor's bonding request. But it is, it was in the Department of Education priorities, and I felt there was a lot of enthusiasm bipartisanly on this issue. Mr. Hammett, real quickly, because we have two more.
Madam Chair, I think there's one other element we'd like to just mention here. In the light of all things that have been happening in national in the state, the recession aspect, talking about getting jobs, mm-hmm. we pulled together. We had 39 different contractors on this project. We had 147 different employees, and we had 34 local employees and have been in the trades. In our area, Madam Chair, we cover the cities, Maple Grove, Hermantown, Duluth, Grand Forks, Fargo, some of the equipment come out of Plano, Texas, but 99.9% has all been in Minnesota, big part in northern Minnesota. And we can put these people to work in October if we can get our funding through and work with this. We've had good experience working with the state and putting these contracts together quick.
Good. We'd like to hear that, too. Thank you very much. Any questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a comment. I know that the new superintendent of Midlake is really doing a good job, so I think we need to be very appreciative of that. The commissioner has numerous times told me in her meetings with him in regard to standards that he is doing such a good job for Red Lake. But I have a technical question for Mr. Strom. What is the expectation for repayment of maximum effort loans? How many have been repaid, and do we still have a forgiveness period?
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, there's been a series of different timelines for repayment of maximum effort loans. Some were issued under a 30-year timeline, others issued under a 50-year timeline for repayment. The majority of the maximum effort loans that have been issued have been repaid, although a number have been forgiven, and most of the current outstanding maximum effort loans, the analysis appears that they won't be repaid. They're to districts where after 50 years they'll be forgiven.
Thank you. Okay. All right. House file, let's see, what is this one? 1120 will be laid over for inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Thank you.
Yes. Now we have Representative Hilstrom and Representative Hortman. Representative Hilstrom is running to the table. Good. Representative Hilstrom, you're on the committee, so welcome, and please move your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that House File 2708 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus or the bonding bill.
Representative Hilstrom moves House File 2708 for inclusion in the omnibus bonding bill. Welcome to the committee, everybody, and Representative Hilstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The first thing that I need to do is amend the amount on line 1.6 and line 1.4. We'd actually like it to be $3,500,000. So if we could just change one of those zeros to a 5, that would be great.
All right. So Representative Hilstrom, this is line 1.6.
Yes.
Instead of 3 million, it's 3 million.
500,000.
3,500,000. All right, we've made that, incorporated that change for the bill author.
And line 1.14 also needs to have it changed. Again.
And 1.14, we make that also 3,500,000.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to just not make any comments and turn it right over to my superintendent to make a case. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Susan Hintz. I'm the superintendent for Osseo Area School, and I do have handouts.
Very good. Then we've got our new pages who are going to pass them out.
Great. It's really a privilege to be here before you today, and we are, as you know from Representative Hilstrom, we are requesting money to put a family services center in a campus situation with our adult learning center and also an early childhood center, and in an area that we know will serve 5 school districts. It's a regional impact. It's a very innovative collaboration, and I'd like to, I was kind of not going as quickly as I usually do because I wanted you to get the handout, but I do want to share with you why we need this. So I'll wait just 10 more seconds while you get the handout because I think that the visuals will be helpful.
And while they're doing that, I just want to, this committee concludes at 3:45. And so we have Representative Hortman. Representative Hortman, are you by yourself or do you have testifiers?
I'm by myself.
Okay, so we're going to give you the last 10 minutes of the committee, which means we have until 25-2, just so you can budget your time.
That's 2 minutes longer than we were going to take. Good
okay,
for
okay, good, good.
Yes.
Okay. Surely you get extra points when we do those little stickers.
Thank you. okay, I would like to start with need first of all. Our school district is absolutely committed to closing the achievement gap, and it might seem unusual to be talking about that in a bonding year, but in fact, there's two big impacts that we know as educators that we can use. One is early childhood. The second is to have some social and economic reform and form collaboratives to really address the bigger issue that many of our students face. We know that for our students to be ready to learn, they have to have a dinner meal, a safe place to sleep, health and dental care, a warm jacket, parents or guardians who are not losing a struggle for employment or struggling with addiction, abuse, or even the challenge of making it in a new country and overcoming a language barrier. So with that in mind, if I could please have you look at the map on the second page and look at the red and orange area, because that is the concentration of poverty in our region. That area affects children, actually 17,000 students in 5 school districts, Osseo Area Schools, Anoka, Robbinsdale, Brooklyn Center, and the northwest side of Minneapolis. So this exciting opportunity for you to work on closing the achievement gap in a bonding year would affect these 17,000 students. 3/4 of the 17,000 students are students of color, 2/3 of those students are in poverty, and 1/3 are English language learners. 50% of the students in that area are not reading at a proficient level. So we believe very strongly that if we could work together collaboratively with the city, the county, the state, the cities, county, state, and school districts, we in fact could really do something for this many children to close that achievement gap. How exciting. I do want to share with you that I talked about it being innovative, collaborative, regional, and I wanted to share with you that our school district has a huge action plan, and one of our goals is to overcome all obstacles. I shared with you the obstacles that I believe this family services can overcome. We also want to leverage the assets of our system and community, and we think to do that, we need you. We've already had talks with Target Corporation, McKnight Foundation, both already committed to our capital campaign, but they're waiting to see if the state will contribute first. And that's what brings me here. I talked to you about lots of partners, and one of those partners is Byron Laird from CEEP, which is the Community Emergency Assistance Program. The first time I practiced, I said community education, which I thought fit.
That was close.
Yeah. Thank you, Byron.
Thanks. Thank you, Superintendent Hintz. Mr. Laird. Yes.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Byron Laird. I'm Executive Director of CEEP, as you heard. CEEP is a United Way partner agency that will be an integral part of this proposed building and campus. We are a food shelf, a clothing closet. We provide rent, mortgage, utility assistance to prevent homelessness. We arrange senior chore services. Last year we delivered 38,000 meals on wheels, and we also run a car loan program to help low-income families get to and from work. We serve Northwest Hennepin County, all of Anoka, and Moundsview and New Brighton in Ramsey. I believe that there are two major components that need to be in place to make the kind of collaboration we're talking about truly successful. One is a strong community support. The communities that have been described to you by the superintendent have been working on this project unwaveringly for 6 years. They are solidly behind this. With this building going up, my agency will sell its building, and we will use the proceeds to move into the new facility. I should tell you, since we have that extra 2 minutes, I'm the new exec at this agency, and yesterday I met our quilters. There's a group of about 40 women that make quilts for infants and for low-income families. And they wanted to meet the new executive director. So I went to their meeting, and I saw some absolutely fantastic quilts. They wanted to know my background. I gave it to them, and then I said to them, do you have a question for me? The only question they had was, what's happening with the new building? Will you get support from the legislature? The second component that I think is absolutely necessary to make this thing successful is to be sure that it is more than just several agencies sharing 4 walls and the same roof. And while this is a unique project involving human service agencies and the school system, there actually is a 20-year successful model that we are drawing on, and that's the Anoka County United Way Human Services Center in Blaine. I was one of the originators of that project when I worked for United Way, and my agency was one of the original agencies moving into that building. We know how to make this kind of collaboration work, and it will work for the communities that we're describing here now. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Laird. 5 minutes, they just are pointing out. I think these are very persuasive people. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the testifiers, is there any other similar regional family service center in our state, or there probably are since you're calling it regional, but I'm not aware of it. Would you explain?
Mr. Lear.
Madam Chair and Representative, the one that I'm familiar with is the one in Anoka County located in Blaine, and that was a collaboration of the City of Blaine, the County of Anoka, and the United Way, with about 26 different agencies housed in that one building, working together, sharing resources, and also working collaboratively with clients. And that's the model that we're drawing on for this collaboration.
And also, Representative Erickson, I think of the John A. Johnson Achievement Plus School, which definitely had funding from the state. Representative Erickson, it looks like you had a follow-up.
Well, Madam Chair, and sir, I was wondering, was there any state contribution in the Blaine example you just cited?
Mr. Lair.
Madam Chair and Representative, no.
Except the Mariani.
Well, Madam Chair, I was going to point out the east side of St. Paul model, and as a member of the Legislative Commission on Poverty, we actually visited one of those, essentially three schools, with Vental, Johnny Johnson, Davis Bluff. And one of the things that was very compelling in terms of education policy was the fact that a similar type of effort had contributed to the stabilization of those children's presence in the school. One of the indicators of success in school is the ability not to be transferred, have a relationship over a longer period of time with a school and with teachers who then know your competency, can do proper assessments, and there's a continuation. So they've been able to take those students and keep them there for a long period of time. And quite frankly, with the poverty indicators there, some of those classrooms, it was not at all unusual for them to lose 80% of their class, for a teacher to lose 80% of their students by the end of the school year. So they've been able to turn that model around. Now, the Johnny Johnson example did receive state funds some years ago through the Wilder Achievement Plus investments that we made in bonding authority.
Thank you very much. And I was kind of shocked, I guess, when you think of, you have this image of suburban districts, but when we looked at the auditor's report in Representative Dominguez's subcommittee this fall or whenever was that, this winter, Osseo was, shockingly diverse, and I think it was 40%, and, it wasn't your stereotypical idea that you would think of a suburban school that wouldn't need these kinds of services.
Madam Chair,
Superintendent Hintz.
Thank you. In my efforts to be expedient, I would like to underscore one aspect that I might have said too quickly. The campus is located at the corner of Brooklyn Boulevard and 71st Street. And the reason that's significant is that Brooklyn Park is also working on affordable housing. They're working on really trying to increase the health and safety of the community, and we're working very closely with them. But then on the campus, in addition to the Adult Education Center, is an Early Childhood Center with both ECSE and ECSE. And we own the property. We own the rest of the property then, our school district. And that's what we bring in terms of a financial commitment. I mean, we have a huge, passionate commitment. But the financial commitment is the property. And that's when we started looking for partners in both the foundations, the city, the county. HCMC has suggested, and it has certainly suggested an interest in perhaps having a clinic. But one of the things, as a person new to this process, I will tell you, is every single one of the potential partners is waiting to hear how our state responds first. So we hear a lot the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, anytime Superintendent Hintz comes to my office, I know it's going to be something creative.
Thank you.
Very, very creative. So thank you very much.
You.
Any other questions? Representative Kilstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I hope all the members of the committee will consider putting their dot next to my project.
Thank you.
And maybe you'll put all your dots on this one, right? Thank you very much. And Representative Portman, I know you didn't mind sitting through that because I noticed this is your school district too, and you're the second author on that last bill. So welcome to the committee, and I'll move House File 978 for Representative Portman. For
members, I'll be brief. I was here last year on the same exact bill, but I did want to, before we move on to my bill, tell you just briefly how strongly I support that proposal. I'm on the board of directors of a charity that's housed in the Anoka County building, and every day that I go there for a board meeting of that charity, there are folks coming in, accessing the food shelf, looking for jobs, taking adult education, preparing their resumes, doing job searching, taking classes, and so it really works incredibly well to have all those things in one building, and I hope that that project gets your support. The bill that I'm here for is House File 978, and I was here last year explaining it to you, I believe with one of my colleagues from the Isaac Walton League in Brooklyn Park. This proposal is to bond $240,000 to purchase a parcel of property that's just north of an elementary school in Brooklyn Park, Riverview Elementary School. Riverview Elementary School is a math, science, and environmental science specialty school that actually Representative Dietrich worked on establishing when she was on our school board in Anoka Hennepin. The school has a greenhouse. It has a waiting list of kids who would like to get into it. It's in an area that was becoming segregated, is my understanding, and so part of the reason to establish the specialty school was to attract a mix of students. It's been highly successful. The students are doing great, and we're having a hard time fitting everybody into the school we'd like to. This piece of property was owned by a family for many years. They ran a nursery and raised trees and other plants on the site. When the couple died, their children sold the property. A commercial developer purchased it. It's not on a busy street. It's in a neighborhood. It's not a good commercial site. They have not been able to sell it for commercial purposes. Unfortunately, in a dispute with the city, they decided to totally bulldoze every living thing on the site, cut down all the trees, and then plowed under all the things that were growing because they weren't getting a rezoning that they sought from the city granted. And this is right next to the Mississippi River. It's a beautiful place where a lot of wild birds find their habitat. It's a lot of wild turkeys. I mean, when you're driving up and down West River Road, that's what you see, and eagles also. So this piece of property is special because it's adjacent to the school, because it's so near to the Mississippi River, and it's connected to the Three Rivers Park District by trails as well. So this would serve as a model and also as a place where people from all over the state could test the experience of learning of prairie restoration. And the packet that I had passed out to you is the Isaac Walton League and the curriculum developer at Riverview's plan for how they would use this site to educate kids. And if you just flip through and just even hit the highlights, it's a great plan to use the property to educate the kids. And thank you very much for passing this along last year. It was included in the bonding bill that was vetoed, and I am hoping that it will be included in this year's bonding bill.
Thank you, Representative Portman. Any questions? Okay, well then we'll lay over House File 978 for possible inclusion or inclusion in the K-12 finance bonding bill. Excuse me, as well as all the bills we heard today, in case I forgot to say that at the end of any of them, like Representative Kilstrom's bill. So thank you, Representative Portman, very much. And members, we have just another 5 minutes, so I'd like to ask Mr. Steves from the Department of Finance to come up, if you would, because I just am curious when the Department of Education recommended Red Lake, and I felt like when they were when we were meeting with them, it was going to be a foregone conclusion, and then we got the governor's bill and it wasn't included, and I wondered if you could shed any light on that for us.
Well, Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brian Steves. I'm at the Department of Finance, and I also have Kara Arzamendia here as well. She's one of our budget analysts. With regard to the recommendations that the Department of Education makes, I have no doubt that they support the project. I think that the recommendations that they've made, at least in my experience with the department, has been that they haven't not recommended a project that they've forwarded in the capital process, at least in the last few years. So, I mean, they have both of the requests on their list, and then they forward it with priorities, and they recommend both projects. So they recommended the library project. They also recommended the Red Lake project. I think that then what that does is it goes into the process of finance looking at those projects, and then the governor's office looking at those projects, and then trying to make some recommendations on those projects. So, and you know, obviously this was a difficult bonding year, and there were over $3 billion in requests this year, and the limit, the 3% debt limit, indicated that a bonding bill, a general fund bonding bill, could only support a $965,000 package. And so the governor ended up having to say no to more than $2 out of every $3 that was requested. And so it's obviously a very difficult set of decisions that had to be made.
Right. So Mr. Steves was, when the department forwarded their requests, did they did Red Lake was further down on the list then?
I believe they had, I can't recall it. They had two projects. I think it was their one out of two. I mean, priority order, I think it was their first, I think it was their highest priority out of two projects.
Okay. Right. So when the governor was prioritizing projects, then he had all the other projects to consider, and he just plain cut it out then.
Right. Obviously, the governor then looks at all agencies that, you know, all requests that have been made. Those come from local governments. They come from state agencies. You know, there's a whole list, and many of you have seen the entire list of requests that have come in. And so the governor looks at all of those requests and makes an evaluation on, you know, priorities and what can fit within the 3% limits and you know, makes recommendations based on his judgment.
Okay. Anybody else have anything? Thank you very much. Okay. With that, we will see everybody on Thursday. The meeting is adjourned.